Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Reggie. The number to reach us to join the conversation is 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. The listen only line, if you don't have computer access to a smartphone, iPad, or anything of that nature, is 605-562-3140. Again, that's 605-562-3140. And that access code is 958590 and the pound sign. Again, that access code is 958590 and the pound sign. We're streaming live at two locations, www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Also, we're on TuneIn. If you have your iPad, your BlackBerry, your tablet, even your desktop, TuneIn is usually a free app. You can download it and in the TuneIn search engine, type in Time for an Awakening, and there you'll see the icon where you can listen to the program live. You can hit us up on Facebook. Time for Awakening has a Facebook fan page. Just go to Facebook search engine and type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by Brother Reg. Before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for Awakening radio program with a fan page on Facebook. Tonight, special guest will be joining us at 7:30 at the quarter break, 7:30 hour. Broadcast journalist and owner of Mount Airy Media, Brother Philip Allen Philadelphia area residents know him as Mount Airy Phil, will be joining us in discussion. Brother Phil has a lecture series that will be starting in Philadelphia on November 21st with a special guest, and I'll let him kind of billboard things when he comes on. But he'll be talking about his lecture series that'll be debuting on the 21st of November here in Philadelphia. And a lot of the topics. Phil is an interesting guy. And on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia area and broadcast nationally. And we'll be talking about various issues, but I want to kind of get to some of the things that Phil is doing here locally. And he'll be joining us at the 7:30 break. And we'll get started. Just banter around a couple topics. Maybe we can get a call or two before Phil joins us. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Are you one of the million conscious black people who believes that we have the collective wherewithal to affect real economic and political change? If so, band together in solidarity by joining the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Choose leadership that will work for the best interests of black people. We can no longer sit on the sidelines and expect things to change for the better without a significant number of black people playing a pivotal role in that effort. Will you be one of the million that recognizes that black dollars matter? Are you that person who believes it's time to leverage our votes for reciprocity from politicians? If so, then you should join the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, with members in 29 states and growing every day. We encourage you to sign up and help spread the word by sharing our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. That's IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
Antiquity to the present. Our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., with your hosts, Elliot and Reggie. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with things this evening, I want to let the listeners know about the launching of Time for Awakening Media, which is in construction now, and we should have some word for you by December the 1st. That's our target. There you'll see a lot of original content being posted, blogs and articles, original articles. Brother Reg will put his journalistic skills to the test, podcasts of the show, black products that we use every day can be purchased directly from the site. So if you like what we do here at Time for an Awakening, send us an email, go to Facebook and like the fan page, and get ready for Time for Awakening Media, which will be coming to you very soon. And also, if you're interested, you can go to www.gofundme.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.gofundme.com/timeforawakening. If you're interested to donate to what me and Brother Reg do here on Time for an Awakening, you donate as little as $5 to anything that you want. Anything is appreciated and gladly accepted. Again, that's www.gofundme.com/timeforawakening. So a lot of things that we have been doing, and we want to expand things that we've been doing with the black farmers, other things, bringing historians in, with lecture series that we had been hosting. And by your participation, it can be expanded, and everything is greatly appreciated. Again, that's the launching of Time for Awakening Media. And also, you can go to the GoFundMe page at www.gofundme.com/timeforawakening to donate anything that you would choose. Brother Reg.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
Great. Fantastic.
Like a little listening audience, we'll have a special guest, Brother Phil Allen. Mountaineer Phil will be joining us around 7:30 to discuss the upcoming Legendary Voices lecture series, live lecture series that he'll be hosting at it's a new venue here in the city. It's an older venue, but it's been purchased and kind of redone. Brother Phil will tell the listening audience about the special guests he'll be having. I don't want to drop any names. I'm going to let him talk about some of the folks, because they're very interesting, and some of them have been some of the folks, in fact all of them in one way or other, have been movers and shakers and some of our folks' development here in this country. But he'll be on in 7:30 hour to talk about some of those things that are upcoming. And, well, I guess in the interim, while we wait, there's a lot of things going on. You know, one of the things I want to throw out there, you know, we played a clip by Black Agenda Report and Bruce Dixon about a month ago, maybe a little longer, talking about Black Lives Matter and them appearing at Democratic fundraisers to generate, get donors, get money streams to come into Black Lives Matter. We posted an article on the Time for Awakening fan page that's very interesting. That talks about now a lot of the big money donors in the Democratic Party, George Soros and others. It had been reported that he had already given money, but it's others now that are getting involved to funnel money towards Black Lives Matter. And to me, that should generate some red flags.
Well, since you're speaking about flags, there's a concept called a false flag or false flag attacks. And the definition is a horrific staged event blamed on a political enemy and used as a pretext to start a war or enact draconian laws in the name of national security. We've known about this event that happened to Paris. What I want to let the listening audience know, especially black folks, we have a diverse listening audience. I'm saying this by some of the posts that we're getting and receiving on our Facebook page. My heart and the purpose of me being on this is to uplift and bring together black folks to get us out of our dire straits. And anybody else that gets a little benefit out of it, so be it. But that's my main purpose. We need to stop being socially used in the social media, Facebook, Twitter, and all these other things that we get mesmerized by. I don't like people losing their lives. I don't like war. But historically, this country has set up, and the other foreign countries have set up and staged events, horrific events, to start a war. And we need to start looking and researching this information and not thinking the first thing we see in the news and we see some blood that is actually is an actual event that occurred. We better do our research and find out some more information. I'm going to read a couple things to you. Israel admitted in 1954 that an Israeli terrorist cell operating in Egypt planted bombs in several buildings, including U.S. diplomatic facilities, then left behind evidence implicating the Arabs as the culprits. One of the bombs detonated prematurely, allowing the Egyptians to identify the bombers, and several of the Israelis later confessed. This is information that you could go on and look. It's declassified information that I'm reading. The CIA admitted that it hired Iranians in the 1950s to pose as communists and stage bombings in Iran in order to turn the country against its democratically elected prime minister. There's things for us to think about before we take the information that's being fed down our throat as gospel all the time. Official State Department documents show that in 1961, the head of the Joint Chiefs and other high-level officials discussed blowing up a consulate in the Dominican Republic in order to justify an invasion of that country. The plans were not carried out, but they were all discussed as serious proposals. As admitted by the U.S. government, recently declassified documents showed that in 1962, the American Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on a plan to blow up American airplanes using an elaborate plan involving the switching of airplanes and also to commit terrorist acts on American soil and then to blame it on the Cubans in order to justify an invasion of Cuba. This is official documents you can find on the ABC News report and also official documentation. You there with me, Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just bear with me, listen, audience. I want to get another one. Now, we know when these things are being done, is some of them being done domestically. Some of these things are being done overseas. One that we all know and talk about, but we didn't get this information until the documentation was declassified about what the FBI was doing to black people in this country. The U.S. Congressional Committee admitted that as part of its ContelPro campaign, the FBI had used many provocateurs in the 1950s through 70s to carry out violent acts, and falsely blame them on political activists. I'm going to read that one more time. And when I read this, think about Ferguson, think about Watts, think about all the areas where riots have gone on, and think about this. A U.S. Congressional Committee admitted that as part of its ContelPro campaign, the FBI had used many provocateurs in the 1950s through 1970s to carry out violent acts and falsely blame them on political activists. Now, we know a lot of our political activists are still locked up as political prisoners or have been jailed. So just things that we need to think about when we start posting, the Parisian flag on our Facebook page. And also, for all the people who are so in love with France right now, I want you to think about Haiti and what has been done to Haiti and the debt that the French still owe to Haiti that they are refusing to pay. They're not going to pay. They say they refuse to pay. And this is money that's owed back to the Haitian government and to the Haitian people. So I just want to put that out there, that everything we see on TV, we better analyze it it's good that we're a sympathetic people. We feel and we care about other people, but we need to care about our agenda, what's going on with ourselves first. Thank you.
You know, were you thanking me? No,
I'm just saying thank you to the listening audience and you.
It's good that you mentioned that, because we got plenty of time to talk about this money being funneled to Black Lives Matter. But you know, watching these early, I watched a couple of football games, and I noticed before the game started,
yes, indeed,
they had the moment of silence and everybody stood up. And
I never seen any of these football games with a moment of silence for the Lebanese.
But the weird thing about it is this:
for the Kenyan people, they're losing their lives. For the Palestinian people who are losing their lives, I've never seen this in the start of a NFL football game.
But the weird thing about it is this: I think our people, and I'm not insensitive to any deaths or anybody being murdered, but I think our people have to stop being pawns to the U.S. media and white supremacist propaganda. To be outraged for Parisian deaths, and the media tells you to be outraged. Earlier this year, an Islamic terrorist group labeled as Boko Haram killed over 2,000 people in a 6-day period in 16 villages in Nigeria. Over 2,000 people. Several journalists got the word out. Amnesty International got the word out in reference to all of these wanton murders, bodies all over the place. You didn't have a moment of silence at baseball games, basketball games. Football wasn't being played. Well, football was being played during that time when this happened. But if you, at your leisure, go to Google, you'll see all the news sites, whether it's CNN, several of the U.S. news sites put this story out about all of these murders. Over 2,000 people murdered, and you didn't have a moment of silence for them. Black folks didn't stand up and have a moment of silence for them. But we wait for European media to tell us to stand up and have a moment of silence for Parisians. As I said, I'm not insensitive to anybody being murdered for any reason, but I refuse to be a pawn for U.S. propaganda or U.S. media to tell me to be outraged about certain things and just ignore other things.
To further that point, Elliot, my thing is, look, if you or sensitive to the plight of people and you're against war, then you got to be against war on all fronts. And I'm talking, this is for the people across the other side of the street that are not sensitive to black lives here in this country and overseas. You want to beat me over the head with how I'm supposed to think and how I'm supposed to feel about what's going on in Paris, but you know, you have people that are living in, black people that are living in Paris that are catching hell, that's not, we don't even talk about that. And we can have a discussion about that, because it used to be a haven for black folks to go over there that wanted to get out of this system, just to go back into the same sort of former system that were artists, you know, in the past. We have several artists, black artists, that went over there, but everything is not so rosy over there as it appears. If you're upset about what happened over in Paris, then you got to be upset about what happened in Beirut, because it stole lives. If you're upset about what happened in Paris, you have to be upset of the ongoing loss of life in Palestine. If you're upset at what happened in Paris, you have to be upset of what just happened in Beirut. If you're upset of what happened in Paris, you have to be upset of what's going on, the loss of women, men, and children, innocent people's lives in Afghanistan. You have to be upset If you say that you're a humanitarian or a humanist and you care about the loss of life. So I want to know, is it the loss of life or is it the loss of white life and white propaganda that you're concerned about?
Yeah, well, we know that the popular media is concerned about white life. That's why they put these stories on the front page.
No, they're not. We're in a democracy. They're concerned. This is a Christian nation. We're concerned about black, Asian, Latinos. We're concerned about everybody
yeah.
in this country.
Okay.
Isn't that correct, Elliot?
Yeah, right.
In this land, you could be
Don't
anybody.
Make me laugh.
You could be Ben Carson. You could be Barack Hussein Obama. We could become presidents in this country. You and I, Elliot.
They tell us that this country was founded on Christian values. That's what they've taught us. That they taught our children that foolishness in schools, but we can see that this country had our forefathers in chattel enslavement for over 250 years. They could care less about any Christian values. So it's time for our people to.
So Elliot, I gotta talk to you like Brother X. Then why the hell you ain't getting out of here? If you know that, Brother Booker.
Okay. I guess you're joking.
No, I'm serious. Why are you?
We have to fight on all fronts, whether we're here or whether we're out of here.
Okay.
It has to be a battle waged on all fronts. So, you know, our people are not go. Everybody is not going to leave this country. Everybody is not interested in leaving this country. But wherever we are, we need to fight for the freedom of our people, the freedom of our babies, and the freedom to have cultural value. The freedom to practice our own cultural values. And in order to practice our own cultural values, we have to know our own cultural values.
So let me ask you this question, Elliot. How can we do that? We're not organized as a people. We have this black lives. I'm just going to put a couple things out there and then you can answer. We had this black lives thing going on about white police brutality, right? And just black folks. But we have a lot of killing within our own community that we're not outraged about. But I do understand we're talking about white supremacy that has been the buffer, the cause, or the foundational part of the problem. We're not organized. We're not serious as the people. Even the ones that said they're awake, we don't work with each other. So I might as well do like, you know, most people do. We don't vote. We just care about taking care of ourselves, our family, and getting paid. So why fight if we're not organized? We're talking about the same thing over and over again. You there, Elliot?
Yeah, I'm here.
I just want to see your thoughts about that.
Well, I know you're asking a rhetorical question, but it's necessary.
I want you to answer some of them.
Well, it's necessary for our people to fight. I mean, when we came here, we were free people. It's clear that we've been indoctrinated, and it's clear that indoctrination is still a part of our DNA. So, unless we just want to assimilate and be something other than what we were, then you know, have at it. Some of our people do. They have at it. They've given up. They've raised the white flag, so to speak, and they just want to be American. And there's nothing wrong with being American if it was about justice and fairness and righteousness. But it's not. This country wasn't founded on that. So it's necessary for our people to fight. It's necessary for our people to know our own values, to teach these things to our children. All other nationalities do that.
Elliot, I'm a Christian. And
we're gonna let's take a break first, and then when we come back, maybe our guests will be joining us. If not, we'll continue the conversation and get other people involved. You can get involved while we're waiting on our guests to join us at 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. Time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Everybody over there,
get on up.
Everybody right there,
get into it.
Everybody right there,
get involved.
Hit me.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and capacity and will to finance their own racial uplift efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Everybody over there,
get on it.
Everybody right there,
get into it.
Everybody over here,
get involved, get involved, get involved.
The first thing to know about the Black Lives Matter confrontation with Democratic presidential candidates Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders is that it did not happen on the street or in some neutral setting. It didn't happen at some random campaign appearance. It happened at the annual Netroots Nation gathering this year in Phoenix. Netroots bills itself as the largest gathering of the progressive movement in this country. Well, unless you think the Democratic Party is the progressive movement, or maybe that all progressives are Democrats, this is nonsense. I know, I've been to Netroots. What it actually is the largest gathering of paid and wannabe-paid Democratic Party activists, Democratic candidates, and Democratic campaign managers, of consultants and vendors to Democratic campaigns, and folks of all kinds who are part of the far-flung partisan and ostensibly nonpartisan machinery which gears up every even-numbered year to elect Democrats to local, state, and national office. Some of them want to change the Democratic Party from within. Some of them want to take the party as it is, but they're all committed to staying inside the Democratic tent and to keeping you there as well. If you're a black Democratic Party activist like I was for 20 years, even if like me you never called yourself that, you go to Netroots to connect with other Democratic Party activists and hopefully with the people who will be handing out grassroots money, among other things, to get out the big black vote in November, without which Democrats on every level have no hope of winning. High-ranking Democrats who hand out money, whether through partisan campaigns or to ostensibly nonpartisan and or nonprofit organizations, are always on the lookout for new activist blood with catchy new hooks, for activists who will say the things that they will not say in the effort to turn out the black masses for that big black vote. So if you are a black activist at Netroots, you really need to stand out to get noticed by the people who can give you fellowships, grants, jobs, funding of all kinds, and a career. Since Hillary is the all but inevitable Democratic nominee, confronting two minor white male candidates, demanding that they say her name, and come up with solutions that address white supremacy, structural racism, and runaway police state, is pretty much a foolproof strategy to get noticed. And as Hillary did not attend Netroots this year, they got to do it without antagonizing the Clinton camp. Hillary widely covered her own ass by releasing a tweet that unequivocally said that black lives do matter. But all in all, the Netroots Nation confrontation was not the stirring of black women activists, quote, taking their rightful place at the front of the progressive movement, unquote, as one breathless tweet called it. It didn't tell us anything we didn't already know about O'Malley or Sanders or about hypocritical Hillary. It was about flying the Black Lives Matter flag to jockey for positions inside the machinery that is the Democratic Party and its affiliates. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com, where you can subscribe to our free weekly email newsletter.
Welcome back. It's a time for an awakening, and we're kind of in open forum until we are joined by our guest, broadcast journalist and owner of Mount Airy Media, Brother Philip Allen. Folks in Philadelphia affectionately know Brother Phil as Mount Airy Phil. He'll be telling us about his live Legendary Voices lecture series that will be debuting in Philadelphia on November the 21st. We'll be waiting on Brother Phil. He's supposed to be joining us within 7:30, anytime after. In fact, anytime. He'll probably jump in and we'll have a conversation with Brother Phil Allen. Until then, we'll take a couple calls or two. Brother Reg.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
That's 215 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Brother Allen. How you doing? Hey, Brother Reg. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Good show. Waiting for Brother Phil to come on. I want to check back up, Brother Allen, to what Brother Reg was saying. But we can't take this stuff that we heard from the media and scouts. We should know that as black people. We should know that. Definitely by now, we don't know it, Brother Reggie. We fools, and even Caucasian people should be leery of their own racist white media, but how they distort and lie to them. Now, you take the example, I'll give you a prime example of what I'm talking about, dear brothers.
Joe, do me a favor. I want you to call back. I want to get our guest on and then.
Oh, sorry, no problem at all. Go ahead. I call back, Brother Elliot.
Yeah, tonight we're joined by a special guest. Everybody knows him in the Philadelphia area, affectionately as Mount Airy Phil. But broadcast journalist and owner of Mount Airy Media, Brother Philip Allen, is with us this evening. Brother Phil is debuting a live lecture series called Legendary Voices that will debut in Philadelphia on November the 21st. Brother Phil, how are you, sir?
I'm scared to death. Because I had this dream about a year ago, right? I was sitting in a meeting that was going on and on and on. I had been frustrated. And by the way, let me go back and say that the first half hour of the show was so amazing. I had a bomb listening to you. I was sitting there, I was recounting, we talked about terror outside of our borders, as we call it, to set up other conflicts. You know, we had that done right inside of our own border constantly. I mean, it's done constantly. We're just force fed a stream of so much negativity now that we've become almost immune to it. I was listening to the list of problems. We can talk about mass incarceration. We live in a state that had 7 state prisons 20 years ago, not at 21, and was 4 in construction.
Yes.
Let me get me started. I just want to say I really enjoyed the program, and thanks for having me. Thank you very much. I'm scared to death about next Saturday. John Carlos is my hero. He is my absolute born-in-the-blood hero. He changed my life like crazy.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned him because I didn't tell the guests who was going to kick off the
I heard you say I'm going to say that itself. Yeah, the series kicks off next Saturday night, and here's how it happened. So I'm sitting in this meeting, right? It was going on forever, I had interviewed Dr. Carlos about 2 days before that, and I was frustrated because when you do terrestrial radio, you get paid by the commercial, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what you're talking about. There's always somebody in your ear saying, you know, you got to wrap this up. You got like one more question. And I'm saying, this is cool. I said, I got to hang up from this to talk to like some jerk from the water department next. You know, I'm like, come on, you got to be kidding me. I got to hang up on John Carlos. So I was in a meeting with some people. And I looked up and I said, why don't we bring these people to town while they're still alive? Archie Maddox and Dr. Carlos and Andrew Davis and my man who's sick, crazy. I love him, Fred Hampton Jr., the son of a legend who's carrying on his father's footsteps like crazy. He's just wild. And he's, you know what? He's the one guy I was always afraid to just put on the air. But in a close setting, you know, in a tag team with Andrew Davis, I think he'd be absolutely amazing. So I pictured having dinner with these people, even a breakfast, you know, and inviting folks to come in and just be part of the conversation. Just have an intimate conversation about before, during, and after, the aftermath of your legend. What happened, you know, after Mexico City? And I pitched it to some people, and everybody laughed. Like, are you serious? Who's going to pay for that? I was like, I would. I said, because these are the messages we need to get out.
Okay.
And this is the library of voices we need to preserve in a living way, not these little 30-second YouTube clips.
Okay.
We need to have a library of our voices, a library to recreate and build new heroes. You seen any lately?
Well,
have you seen any lately?
No.
All my heroes.
And we're going to talk about some of that later on. But what I want you to do, tell the people the venue. You know, it was an old venue. Well, not an old venue. It was a venue that people in Philadelphia are familiar with. But
it was there for years.
Okay.
It was jazz club, nightclub, you know, fairly well to do restaurants. You know, I lived in LA for the past 20 years, so I was very familiar with it. They had some great shows there, and in the summertime, it was a great venue. However, I never felt, and I always felt it was kind of underused. It could have been used more in a theater setting. And we need to do things that aren't just black people dancing.
Okay.
Damn, I'm tired of dancing. I'm tired of seeing people dance. Y'all kind of problem in our neighborhood. Everybody just dance. Throw electric slide. Everybody just start dancing. Like, what the hell? So I want to do something that allows us, anyway, a guy I know who owns a bookstore, who I helped him open a bookstore. I've been a book business for 7 years. I helped him get his book business started. He bought the building and has totally redone the interior. It's beautiful. It's bright. It's still very intimate. It's alma mater. It used to be North by Northwest. And then it was 7165 now. But it's at the corner of Germantown and Mount Airy. You cannot miss it. You cannot miss it. And it's going to be a great night. I'm telling you, I had this dream that we could do this and that we could create. I've already got a film crew that volunteered their time. They're going to film the event for me and create a DVD. I want to have a series of these. I've already spoken with Andrew Davis, Fred Hampton, John Chaney. A friend of mine is working as an associate to the public for Terrell Owens. You're going to say, well, why? So why Terrell Owens? Well, why not? Why mix it up just a little bit? You know what I mean? We're not creating new legends, new heroes, Alton Maddox. I think there's people whose voices we need to preserve and whose message really needs to be heard by our kids. And what I'm doing is for every adult, it's going to be really nice. It's going to be intimate. But there's also expenses involved. So I created a ticket plan that allows you to bring a child for free. If you buy a ticket and you have a son in 16, 17, bring him. Because he's the one we're trying to get this message to.
Yeah, I agree. It's important for the young people to be exposed
exactly.
to these
men. I don't want you saying my son's not worth $40 or my son's not worth $30 at dinner. Yes, he is. No, because my people are twisted. They'll go to Chuck's Alibi and spend $55 buying drinks and hanging out around the bar. But then you tell them you want to go to an event, a fundraiser for Black Talk Radio Network or something like that. All of a sudden, they got a problem pulling $40 out their pocket. So I'm gonna make you do it because this is a night. How many times you get to have dinner with a legend?
Wow,
I like the concept. The concept is a beautiful concept. This is Brother Reg. Brother Phil, and
how you doing, Brother Reg?
I'm doing good. I know you well, and I want to put this out there. That sister, Dr. Taliba Foster,
uh-huh.
I used to love what you used to do on the psychology of yourself and others. I think that's a good thing. And you're talking about, you know, the tickets and bringing the children. That's something that we need to start working with our people and their psychology and their thinking and showing them, listen, you know, your thinking is kind of flawed.
Social media, Brother Reg, you said this about 15 minutes ago. You said this. I'm listening. You said that social media is disconnecting our people. And it is. It's disconnecting from their past. It's disconnecting from their history. It's disconnecting them from what should be black programs and policy in the same way that when the Israelis broke away from Germany, the Jewish people broke away from Germany in mid-40s, they created their own social structure and policies, expectations, and set bars for performance and behavior. And we no longer do that. We turn our kids over to an iPhone and let them text and tweet the day away. It's total nonsense. It's the destruction of our children.
I agree, my brother.
Brother Phil, you know, it would be very interesting to see and hear from John Carlos, you know, what he did. Now, I was a young man, and I'll never forget. That was the first Olympics that I sat and watched, that I understood what I was watching. And when I seen the race, because, you know, my father was always a big track and field fan. So he made sure that we were in front of the TV for boxing and for the track.
How old were you?
At that time,
I was nine.
I was nine.
Okay, because here's why he's first. When I was 8 years old, I lived in Ardmore.
Okay.
You know Ardmore, about 5 miles west of here.
Mm-hmm.
And my school was 80% white. And I fought every day in 1968 to have those kids call me color. I didn't want you calling me the N-word anymore.
Okay.
And I fought all the time to be called color. I just wanted to be the color kid. Leave me alone. I live in Ardmore now. Please excuse me. Then all of a sudden, John Carlos pops on the screen with his black brother, and people start raising their heads and talking about black power. And I went to school and I told all the white kids that as of today, I'm black. And you got any problem with it, tell me now, because you can get your ass with right today. And that's what they did for the next year until we moved. I just beat up white kids for every time they said it wrong. But it was John Carlos standing on the podium that day. You talking about COINTELPRO? They tried to destroy him.
Yes.
And this is why people need to hear this message. Because in the year after he stood on that podium, they were photoshopping pictures and sending them to his wife. The pictures of him coming out of hotels with white women and in bed having threesomes with white women. They were photoshopping him. They had white women calling his house like he was Martin Luther King. The same way they did Dr. King.
Wow, okay.
They did the same thing to him. Yeah, they destroyed his job. They just tried to destroy his track career. In the year after Mexico City, he broke the world record not once but twice. And he will tell the story of how he was determined not to let them break him.
I think
that they were not going to break him. They were not going to break his family.
I think he had a brief NFL career and played here with these Philadelphia Eagles also.
Yeah, I don't want to tell the whole story. I want people to come out. You have to hear this. There's the base. All right, hold on. Here's the keys, ready? There's this amazing story he'll tell about the time he stole 10 pounds of marijuana when he was in high school. He's from Harlem, and he was a straight hustler. And his story is so amazing. And he had a premonition that he would be on that podium. You have to come out to about to hear his story. And it's genuine, and it connects. And, like, the greatest day of my life was when I began to have this idea. I reached out to him, I reached out to some other people, and one day my phone rang, and it was John Carlos, and I turned to my girl, and I was like, yo, you gotta be kidding me, John Carlos is on the phone, you know, and I've interviewed Doc, I've interviewed Iverson, I've interviewed, like, everybody, you know, working at ESPN,
okay.
And nothing was like the moment I looked up and seen that 760 California number for San Jose, and it was Dr. John Carlos calling me. I was like, are you serious? So it's still like that for me. So I'm really excited about Saturday night, and I really appreciate you giving me a chance to come on and talk about it. It's going to be the greatest night of my life. And I did the pregame, listen, I did the pregame and the halftime for Allen Iverson's retirement ceremony, where they took his jersey to the rafters.
I had Doc sitting next to me crying. That's nothing compared to sharing the stage with John Carlos today. That's nothing. Because these are just athletes. They ain't doing nothing for nobody.
Now, Phil, let me ask you, because, you know, I like the idea of the intimate setting. That way the people can almost like they're sitting in their living room talking.
It's going to be interactive, exactly. Now, I want somebody to be so far away that they feel like they're just part of, you know, everybody's going to be in touch.
Now, will you be, how is it? Will you be sitting there asking the person questions and having
Well, here's what's going to happen.
Go ahead.
Between 5:30 and 6, Dr. Carlos will arrive. I've arranged for him to be driven around solely for the weekend. I'm not playing at all.
Okay.
And he'll arrive between 5:30 and 6. He has a nephew. He's staying here. So although he'll have a room here, he's going to move around the city a little bit. Like you said, he played here for a year. He has family here. And he'll arrive by 6, take photographs, sign pictures, take pictures with people, just kind of, hang out in the room. And then at 7 o'clock, him and I will take the stage. Sherelle Parker, the honorable state representative, now councilman-elect Sherelle Parker, who has been very generous in sponsoring this event with me. She will introduce me. I will introduce Dr. Carlos. We'll have about a 40-minute conversation on the stage with microphones and the cameras rolling. That's what I want to preserve. That's the body of the program, Legendary Voices. So he'll be able to share his history before 68, after 68, what it was like in Mexico City, and then what his life. And then he's going to discuss the state of Black America. At that point, I'm turning over to the audience, do a little 15, 20-minute Q&A, and then after that, I have a stack of his books set up. He'll sign some books, take some more photographs. We'll thank him for coming, and have a great evening.
Now, what is the next one? Do you already have a tentative schedule?
I do. It's Andrew Davis and Fred Hampton. It's scheduled for January. I don't have a date yet.
Now, they'll be together?
They'll be together,
wow.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
How about that? Wow. How about that?
Okay. Okay.
And I don't have anything lined up for March yet. I have a hold in March, but I have John Chaney and Aaron McKee together for March.
Okay.
So February. And then March, I have John Chaney and Aaron McKee. So we're working, but I'm dedicated to doing this. I think that Coach Chaney's voice is another one that needs to be preserved. Remember, long before he was the coach at Chaney University and the later Temple and in the Basketball Hall of Fame, he was just a high school gym teacher at Sayre. I don't know, 57th and 58th and what is it, Walnut?
Walnut
and Walnut for 10 years. So he has a history in the city that goes back 45 years.
Phil, you mentioned, and listen, you've been a general subject host in this city on terrestrial radio, and you made your bones being a sports host. Let's spin it off and talk about Black athletes in sports, and use the framework of John Carlos and Tommy Smith, also Jim Brown when he organized. He wasn't Jabbar at that time. He was Lew Alcindor, Bill Russell, and some of the athletes together to stand in unison for Muhammad Ali's decision not to fight in the Vietnam War. The social activists or the social activism of some of those athletes at that time isn't much different now. And I'm talking about the time.
It's very simple. There's a really simple answer to that.
Go ahead.
Here's a simple answer, and I'm going to go back before. You got to go back even farther. Before Kareem came into the league, Wilt took him under his wing and taught him the ropes. Nobody knows that story. Before Kareem even left New York City to go to UCLA, he spent a couple of years, almost living downtown in Wilt's apartment in Manhattan. Wilt didn't live here when he played for the Sixers. He lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he took care of Kareem and prepared him for that transition to UCLA. So there was a different mindset. Remember, Will had come out of West Philly 56th Street, and all of a sudden he's in Manhattan, Kansas. You know, there's a cultural shock there. You go, it's a little less going from New York to LA, a little less for Kareem, but that he hadn't made that choice yet. But then here's the biggest difference. This is my opinion, but I think it just makes sense. This guy spent 4 years on college campuses. They grew up. They were men when they graduated. For the most part, Earl Monroe spent 4 years at Winston-Salem. He was a man when he came to the NBA. He had a personality. He understood his social place in the world, he hadn't been blinded by $9 million and an entourage at age 19. And to, don't tell me that it doesn't shape you. It doesn't, you think the AI could have been a total, and I love him. I love him as a person. I'm learning to like him more. I've seen him since he made the transition off the court. He's getting better at it. But look at the opportunities he threw away along the way because he just wasn't educated in the real world. He went straight from a jail to Georgetown to the NBA in a span of, what, 20 months, and went from making no money and wearing a jumpsuit to all of a sudden he had $18 million in his pocket. And okay. After him, it was lights out after that. These kids don't get an opportunity to mature. They just don't. And it's hard for me to argue that they should stay in college and play basketball for 3 years because if you get hurt, you're not worth a dime, and it's over. I get all that. It's just common knowledge. If you go to a restaurant, you're a chef, you can work wherever you want, play basketball, work wherever you want. But it's had a huge impact on their ability to deal with real life. They're never exposed to it. They go straight from the AAU, being shuttled around, driven around in cars, and dropped off and picked up, to all of a sudden they're staying in five-star hotels and flying on a charter jet with $10 million in an entourage. Where does reality come in?
Hey, brother.
Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, brother Phil, using that premise you just used, I just want to get your thoughts on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has said something before his documentary came out about Michael Jordan's position as far as not doing a lot in the community. And we know that he went to school. I think didn't he go 4 years in North Carolina?
No. Michael Jordan, came out, I believe, after his sophomore season. But when he beat – when they beat Georgetown, he left.
He's
been an embarrassment. I'll share this quote with Dr. Carlos with you. I spoke to John Carlos, I guess 2 years ago on the air, and I asked him that very question. What do you say to the Michael Jordans and the Charles Barkley's and you know, LeBron James and these guys when you see them making all this money and doing absolutely nothing? And he said that he stopped Michael Jordan in the airport one night, and he asked him, he said, Michael, how many millions of dollars does it take before you become a man?
Wow.
And he said he just stood there. He just stood there staring at him. But he hasn't. All he's done is drain, economically helped to drain the life out of our community. We still have to make better choices with our dollar. But when you're putting these $100 million sneakers in front of our kids and making, you see, that's parenting, man. You know, you can put whatever you want in front of my kid. I don't have to buy it. That's a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. But no, he hasn't, and he hasn't. He's had a huge opportunity, and he still does because he's a young enough man. What is he, 53, 54 tops? And he can still be a viable voice in our community. But the flip side is because we have no opposing voices to a guy like Charles Barkley who says some of the most ridiculous things ever to come out of a black man's mouth. So he always gets front row play. But no, our entertainers, our sports figures, for the most part, they've been bought out. You know, you sign that deal, and you belong to, and you become a corporation. They want you to feel like one. And then there's some who have unique opportunities because of guarantees. And I said this about Donald McNabb for years, because of the way his contract was structured, there was nothing the Eagles could have done to him that could have hurt him. Because of the way his contract, they wanted him to be the quarterback for 10 years. So he had $157 million covered, and about 80 of it was guaranteed. And if they had failed to sign him and he was healthy and able to play, and they had failed to sign the automatic renewal thing, he would have got like a $20 million buyout and been a free agent at the height of his career. And this is a guy who would not say a word, if anything, created more dissension and problems than he did. And he had no community. He lived in a gated community in Voorhees. He would, if you dropped him off in Sinclair and Morgan, he'd be lost. He'd be calling the cops. So, no, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Because our athletes used to live downtown. Our athletes used to live in the city.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with our special guest, Phil Allen, affectionately known as Mount Airy Phil. He has a special
he
event.
He doesn't sell sexually anymore.
Well, you're right.
At one time, it really wasn't. I'm sure
he has a live lecture series starting on November 21st here in the City of Philadelphia, Legendary Voices. It'll debut with John Carlos. We'll be right back to continue the conversation, and you can join, too, at 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. When we come back, I want to kind of frame the conversation with a clip I want to play, but we'll talk about that after the break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Hit me!
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and capacity and will to finance their own racial uplift efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Everybody over there!
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined this evening in conversation with Brother Phil Allen, broadcast journalist and owner of Mount Airy Media. Brother Phil will be launching his live Legendary Voices lecture series, which will debut on November 21st. And the debut will be Dr. John Carlos. afterwards, Angela Davis will join in conversation along with Fred Hampton Jr. It ought to be very interesting to see these people live in an intimate setting. Brother Phil.
I'm telling you, again, it's like a dream come true. It's something that I wanted really bad. I thought that we deserved it. And to be the host, and it's mind-boggling to me that next Saturday night, Dr. John Cullis is going to walk into a restaurant and sit down with me, and we're just going to have a conversation. And I think that I don't know how you could choose to be anywhere else in this city at that point in time. And I don't even have to be the host. I'll write the damn questions down and just hand them to him. If that's what you want. I just think that it's such a great event, and I couldn't be more psyched. And I got to take a minute, because I know you want to play the audio clip, right? And I want to hear it. I was wondering what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? I just need to stop for a second and say thank you to the guy, to the people who sponsored me. I got a text message from one of them. They were like, hey, I'm listening. You better be reminding us why this is happening. It's the Honorable Sherelle L. Parker, my friend, the state representative from Mount Airy. And say what you want about politicians. She's been good for my community.
Okay.
And I knew that. She works hard. My brother Sharif Elmecki at Massey Charter, the principal there. Jim Smith Jr. at jimsmithjr.com. And, of course, Maine Life Psychiatric. The home of the lovely Dr. Tanika Foster. Those are my sponsors, and without them, I'm not sure I could have got this done. They're providing airfare and hotels and food and drivers and all that stuff. And I'm not bringing John Carlos to Mount Airy and treating him wrong, man. He's a legend. He should be flown in first and delivered in a limo to the building. And that's how I'm doing it, man.
Okay.
That's how I'm doing it. So he called Edward Davis to give his recommendations. He said, yeah, they treat you good in Philadelphia, and you know what else? They show up and they listen.
Wow.
They show up and they listen. So I thank you guys for allowing me to come on again and promote the event, man.
It's no problem.
I want to ask you a question, Phil. And it goes back, it's tying into radio. I've listened to you on all aspects of Black history, white supremacy, sports, and you got the sports down locked, you know, and I hear you, and I see how you handle people and how you break stuff down, and it's excellent. What I want to ask you and let the listening audience know, when you were just talking about this is a dream, this event next Saturday, I want you to talk to the listening audience and let them know about Phil Allen's experience and vision to even get on radio. Because I used to hear you as a calling in, and the vision, the vision that you had. I think it's the reason why I bring it up. I think it's very important for Black people to understand that when you put positive visions and thoughts into your mind, and don't block and shoot your own foot, put your own foot in front of yourself to trip yourself, things could happen. People could come in your life. Avenues can be open for you. I just want you to tell us how you did that, because I think it's very important for our children to understand this type of concept.
So I'm driving home from Eagles training camp one day, right? And I'm listening to the radio, and I had a cell phone. And cell phones were relatively new then, I guess. This was like 90, 91. It was new for me, right? And I called the radio station because the guy was getting on my nerves. And he goes, you're an idiot and a moron. Don't you ever call a radio station again. You have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like, wow, that was mean. So I hang up, right? So I started listening to sports radio then. But then I bought this business that required me to travel to New York. I missed the radio a lot. But all of a sudden, I was going to New York 4 or 5 days a week by car. And so I was listening to sports radio again. And I started calling in the station. And I don't know. I'm not sure what happened, but I decided that that's what I wanted to do. But I wanted to get on sports radio, because somebody stopped me in the street one day. They said, yeah, you got a good voice. I heard you on the radio. You should be on the radio. And I got like this. I said, I don't even know where Phil from that name came from. But all of a sudden, he was mine. Then I got an opportunity to be in the Eagles movie because of being on the radio, because we were one of the, you know, the callers on the radio. This producer called the station and said, no, he gets in touch with this guy, we'd like to put him in the movie. So for the next 16 months, I had a camera crew following around. That was pretty cool. It ended at the Eagles Super Bowl. And then I started doing, the guys from the radio station started calling me, asking me, could I come back? I also do stand-up comedy. I do voices and stuff. And I would come down and do, you know, different voices on the air and help them with different segments. And I started thinking, wow, if I can do this for them part-time, why can't I do it myself without them? Why can't I do my own show? So I started emailing the general manager and stuff, asking for a chance to do a show. I would send him whole shows that I had written out, like word for word, like four-hour radio shows without a commercial break. And Mike Missanelli told me, he goes, if you're serious about getting in this business, he said, when you program your show, act like you're never going to get a single call and there's no commercial breaks. And I wrote a four-hour show, and I wrote about 20 of them. I sent them to the general manager at WIP. And finally, he broke that and gave me an interview. And the guy hires me, right? The next day, he gets fired. I swear to God. I'm telling you, this is the absolute true story. The next day, he gets fired. So I've never started at WIP. I worked there for one whole day. He hired a new guy. He never called me. I emailed him a couple times. He never responded. Mike got fired about 6 months after that. And when he went to the Fanatic, he told them, you should hire this guy. And he gave me an audition. Next thing you know, I was on the air. And a year later, I was hosting his Eagles postgame show and the Flyers postgame show, which I thought was kind of cool. No black people have ever been happy in the United States anywhere. So I hosted the Eagles and the Flyers. Only hosted the Flyers postgame show for 1 year. It was a little difficult. There was a lot of resistance. Being in the press box, I was the only black man in the press box every night for 84 games. It was just, I'll give you an example. My first night doing hockey, right? I get to the Wells Fargo Center, and I got this huge orange media pass hanging around my neck. I get on the press elevator, because the press, for the Sixers game, the press sits right down behind the basket. Mm-hmm. But for the Flyers game, the press box is way up at the top of the balcony. Great view, too. My first night down there, I get on the press elevator, and the guy says,
Phil? I think we must have lost our caller. Brother Phil, you there? Phil?
Yes, man. Sorry.
Okay, no problem.
I'm sorry. I guess I did that. Anyway, my first night, I get on the press elevator, and the guy tells me to stay safe and say, this is for Aramark employees. Because all the Aramark people take the other elevator. This is the Express. I said, I'm a media member. He goes, what media are you a member of? You're a cameraman? I said, no. I'm the host of the Flyers Coast Camp show. I thought he'd have a heart attack like Fred Sanford. You should have seen him. I think the elevator went slower than it ever had. I mean, these people were so, it was, because I've been on it before. No, these people were, they were just so shook up about a black person being in that press box, and it just made me more determined that I didn't care. But I think the station, by the end of the season, was just glad that it was over, because it was just bad, and it was difficult getting interviews. It was just a total resistance. In Canada, there's one brother who does hockey, but he does it only from the studio. There's nobody else who is doing hockey in the United States or Canada from the press box but me.
So you was a trailblazer then, Phil.
Yo, I'm the only. Think about it. There's been 35 years of sports radio in this city. I'm not saying it's nothing black. I'm saying it because it's pathetic and wrong. It's wrong. I'm not that arrogant to think that I'm the only black man who can do sports radio. What kind of jackass would I be if I thought that? I'm the only black man smart enough to do sports radio. Are you kidding me? It's wrong. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with me. They chose me. They could have chose anybody. But the truth is that there's been 35 years of sports radio in this city, and only one black man who didn't play for Eagles, and that's me. And it's fucking, excuse me, it's dead wrong. It's dead wrong. But nobody says anything. Like, people email me, you're not old enough. You don't get the right stuff.
And I would say, don't email me. I don't program the damn show. I just show up when they tell me to. You follow me? And the thing is, they know that. Here's the truth behind working at ESPN. I'm still an ESPN employee as of right now. But here's the truth. They know that if you walk out that door right now, and they put your job on a want ad and say that everyone who wants that bitch should be in the lobby at nine, you may barely get a parking spot.
Okay.
People will run each other over. They don't give a damn. There's only one mic, and everybody wants it, man. Some of the stuff I've seen at ESPN Radio, please, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You have no idea. The safety you are in the radio for home. The only time I'm happy is when the red light is on, yo. That's it.
Phil,
the rest of the time it's the same mess that you find in the street. People backbiting, biting each other's backs out, lying, trying to set you up, just total just nonsense.
Phil, the clip I want to play, you know, it's two voices on there. One legendary and one is a entertainer, a hip-hop artist. But it's really strange what is being said. And not strange, it's really the crux of the problem, so to speak. You know, all of our entertainers and athletes, the majority of them come from the communities that we see all the time. You find some of them that was born with a slight silver spoon in their mouth.
Very true.
Guys like Grant Hill, maybe, that was born with a silver spoon, so to speak. But most of them come Exactly. Most of them come from the communities. But I want you to listen to this clip. And the listening audience, and I want to talk about it afterwards. Hopefully, we can hear it.
But as of now, money means nothing to me, nor boxing, when it comes to the freedom of your people. So everything I'm doing, if it means hitchhike tomorrow, if it means be raggedy, if it means look for a job, I'll be happy because I can go to bed, my conscience is clear, and I didn't sell out or trade my people just because I could be rich in Hollywood with a yacht out here on my... That could be my yacht right there. I imagine it's valued at $200,000, but I wouldn't want that damn yacht if I couldn't go back over in the black neighborhood and protest a black woman being raped. The hell with the yacht. The hell with the championship. So I want the people to know this. You understand?
They're doing a special... on Mike Brown, the Ferguson situation. What do you think needs to be changed in the way that black men are policed in America?
Lee, that up with the critics and the laws and all that other shit. We having fun, we iced out, we having money. That's how we doing.
Do you feel like it's not the artist's place to speak on social issues?
No.
Did you hear that, Phil?
Absolutely. I heard it before.
Good.
I heard it before. It's been said it 1,000 times, 1,000 different ways by 1,000 different fools. It's hard for me to blame them. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I want to talk about that a little bit and spend a little time on it because the black athletes as a whole kind of fear retribution. They fear these white corporate America kind of shunning them if they speak on social issues. I'm getting a little interference, but we'll fight through it. If they speak on social issues. And it reminds me, one that comes to mind, I think it was last year when Dwight Howard of the Houston Rockets, when the conflict between Israel and Palestine kind of started getting hot and heavy, it kind of flares up every 2 or 3 months. Several entertainers, and is that me? I think that's on your end, Phil. We're getting a little interference. All right. You still there?
I don't hear anything. It sounds fine to me.
Good, good. Reg, you there? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm muted off.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. We one entertainer tweeted out "Free Palestine," and I think Dwight Howard did the same thing. But he immediately had a firestorm of repercussion. By Jewish groups, Jewish organizations, and other folks. And immediately he sent out a tweet apologizing for what he said and saying that he would never get involved with social issues again. Now, you're in sports, so I know that you're probably familiar with that, his response. to the controversy that supposed controversy that he started. The problem is this. We see Ali's response, which should be the response of a lot of black athletes. They have a responsibility, as far as I'm concerned, because they have a bully pulpit that the overwhelming majority of their people don't have, to speak to these social issues. They could be a voice to their people. It's a disgrace to me when these men, and I'll use the men a lot because, you know, the women has a responsibility, but I kind of look at men in a little different light, not a sexist light, but as far as responsibility. They have a responsibility to speak to these issues, and it really hurts me and sickens me when I hear a young man speak the way he did foolishly on that clip. Talk about that issue in regards to Muhammad Ali and then the dichotomy of the hip-hop artist saying what he said, Phil.
Well, again, look at the education of Muhammad Ali. Although he wasn't a college graduate, he came along at a time when social issues were front page every day. There wasn't distraction. There weren't enough distractions, even with him training and boxing, having an Olympic experience. There weren't enough distractions to make him ignorant to his community. When you look at these kids today, 75% of them don't know. They just don't know. They live in these cocoons of just luxury that don't allow them to know. They just don't know because they don't pay attention or they choose not to. 15% want to, but I agree with you. I believe that they fear repercussions, especially in the National Football League where there's no guaranteed contract.
Okay.
And for the most part, you know, you march in lockstep. When was the last time you had an Eagle have a dissenting view of any personnel move or anything that's been done in that organization, even when it was apparent that it was either a personal strike back against a player because he didn't take the money, or, you know, so all of a sudden he becomes a scapegoat and a lesser player, or just a player they wanted to move under false pretenses like DeSean Jackson, who Chip Kelly didn't like the fact that DeSean actually had a set and just didn't want to just go along with the program.
Mm-hmm.
He felt that he was just that good of a player. And so they ran him out of town on the rail, and look at the firestorm they created around him. You know, there's all of a sudden the personal attacks, he was this, he was
that.
He's
a gang member, yes.
To this day, the kid never tries or anything. And I like the way you talk about using clips, because one of the things with Allen, whenever he was in trouble, he would always go to his mother, remember?
Okay.
There's some of the worst audio clips in the world available of her just saying crazy stuff. But you never hear them go to DeSean Jackson's mother. Why is that? Because she's the president of Delta Sigma Theta in L.A.
Wow.
And she's a very wise, smart, and articulate woman. And she's going to speak articulately about her son in his defense, and you'll never hear a clip of his mother. It's all shaped by who controls the narrative.
And, you know, that's one thing dealing with the media, and I've been an admirer of yours for a while, that we have to create a new narrative of our people, to put out positive images and images that our people can strive for, not just the money. I think that if a person is moral and do right by other folks, the money will come. That's what I believe. But some people, at the expense of their own, put money ahead of doing the right thing. And that's where I think the problem comes.
You can change the way our media portray? Oh, absolutely. Listen, here's the truth. In order to black media to flourish, and here's the bottom line.
Go ahead.
We need some owners. We need some owners.
Exactly.
We need a guy like Michael Jordan who has $200 million, who can afford to lose $10 million buying an FM station and running it for 5 years until it gets on the ground and up and running by itself. Because it takes a long time. It takes 18 months before anybody finds you on the air. So if you're only doing that on AM to a limited audience, you're never going to have the impact of a high power 50,000 watt FM signal. Until we have owners, we'll never be able to change the narrative because our narrative is already controlled. I'll give you a perfect example one day. Two years ago when Riley Cooper had that, you know, the night with the security guard,
mm-hmm.
he used, you know, that word.
Yes.
For a week, my station, with me out of town, for a week, my station talked about nothing but that. The ratings were through the roof. I'm getting emails, yo, Phil, where are you? We want to hear from you. What do you have to say about this? Really, black men, they're blah, blah, blah. You know, ad infinitum. When I got to the station, I got an email 5 minutes before I was supposed to go on air saying that they did not want me to discuss the Raleigh conversion. And that it had been done to death. I was like, uh-uh. It was just done for 4 hours while I was on my way here. I'm doing it too.
Wow. They actually told you that they didn't want you to discuss it.
And when I said I was going to do it anyway, I said it's too late. I said, I reprogrammed the show. I got clips and guests and everything. I got a phone call a minute before I was supposed to go to air. And he goes, well, you can't make it the focus of the show. I said, it's too late, you know. I said, I just spent 6 days listening to white people discuss a black issue, and you're going to tell me I cannot? Well, that's not necessary. I said, come on, man. Keep it 100. I was like, we're not doing that. I said, my audience would hate me if I came on here and started talking about who's going to be the next Eagle quarterback in the midst of this conversation. I was like, are you serious? I said, I can't do that. It'd be true to me. I was like, no, I said, my people believe me. And they believe when I come on the air that I'm telling the truth. I'm not going to come in here and talk about something else.
Phil, let me ask you something, because it was kind of silent when it happened, and it was silent around. It might have been discussed on the show with was it First Take with Stephen Smith and the other guy, but I can't see the show a lot. I don't know whether it was.
Yeah.
I think that it was that game, and I watched the game when it was here, the game against Temple and Notre Dame. I think it was late in the fourth quarter or early in the fourth quarter. When something happened, I think it was a controversy, and the ref it came over to explain something to one of the coaches. It was a strength and conditioning. And the thing that really stood out, that he was one of the few black coaches, the only one I saw on the sideline. He's a young man, a strength and conditioning coach. And evidently the head coach must have heard it in his headset, because he was a ways from the coach. He stormed down the sideline and basically attacked that man, grabbed him around his throat, and had to be separated. But it was like it never happened. I'm watching this on television, and I'm saying, like, what is going on? Then afterwards, you try to find out something, nothing. What happened on, what was going on there?
You know what, I'm not sure. And the one thing about football is that their rules allow them to be more. You don't have to. A guy can have his leg broken in 8 places. All you got to do is say he has a lower body injury. You're never going to find out. It's going to be fixed internally, which it should be, especially in football, in my opinion, because you have to try to preserve your locker room so you don't want all the stuff being put out in public. You're Temple, you're the home team. You just lost the biggest game in 40 years. So, yeah, if you don't want that to be a distraction, honestly, I have no idea.
I'm
the Temple guy, so I don't even want to know. I'm just disappointed that my team played so badly yesterday.
Well, let me say this, and I want Brother Rich to get in on this one. I think, and this is just my opinion, I might be wrong, I think that the reason you don't see a lot of these young men become a little more socially active is because they're raised, and I'm not saying, I'm just using a generality. I'm not saying in all cases, because there's plenty of young men that have come from single parent homes that are conscious of things. I think LeBron James came from a single parent home, if I'm not mistaken. And I put on the Facebook page something that you put my code in reference to. But I think the problem is that a lot of these young men come from single-parent homes with men in and out of their lives dealing with their mothers. They might hear derogatory things in reference to black men. So they come up with a jaded view of their own people, especially black men. They don't look at blacks in authority. They don't respect it. A lot of them don't respect themselves. So when these social issues come up, they're really, it's like they have no connection with it when they should. These things affect them. It reminds me of when after Trayvon Martin, when LeBron James had the rest of the Heat wear a hoodie as a means of solidarity. After Michael Brown got killed in St. Louis, some of the players came out, 3 of them, I can't remember their names, came out with it like a hands up, don't shoot, and it started a firestorm. You know, I think, and I want to get you and Reg weigh in on this. I think the problem, a lot of the problem, is that these young men come up in single parent homes, and there's no man involved there, no real man involved in guiding these young men's lives. Because if it was a real man involved, guiding these young men's lives, giving them principles, or giving them a backbone, giving them morals, then they would be a little more socially conscious when it comes to issues dealing with their people. Talk about that, Phil and Reg, jump in.
Well, Reg, you can take it out. I'm listening.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is, you know, you got to take it on a case-by-case basis. But a lot of it, you don't have to be a man. You don't have to be, it doesn't have to be necessarily the father there. Just needs to have men around. And what's happened is, what I've seen, is there's no separations from the grandfather to the grandson because they listen to the same music. Pants are hanging down the same way, using the same language, smoking the same blunt, doing the same behavior, drinking the same liquor. That's not all. There's no separation. So my feeling is when you deal with children, whether you're dealing with a 5-year-old straight to a high school, and you know, I teach mixed martial arts classes. They don't want to see you preaching to them one day and then you're not around them any other time. I think a lot of the young people, they want direction. Young people, they want you to tell them what to do. But you have to be consistent and you have to be around them and you have to understand that they're going to make a mistake. You have a lot of older black people that get their religion up in them and act like they didn't do anything they went to high school. There's no compassion toward our children. I look at the environment. When I'm dealing with children from different environments, you have to take that into context when you're dealing with the children. You know, how you talk to them. You know, what are their weak points? You have to look at that. Even some of the older men. It's not, you know, the way the society is set up for our children to be uneducated and distracted. That's how it's set up. And you have these older men that come with all this money playing sports or whatever. It's the same mindset, except that they're older. They're distracted. The thing that's really pushing a lot of our communities is having a lot of women, having a lot of money, and looking fly. If you talk to most of the guys in a hood, that's what they're going to tell you. That's what they see. That's what they're told. A lot of them not told anything else. So you can't expect them to have any type of different behavior. And I think when we start looking at our children, instead of looking at them like they're pariah, looking at their needs, you know, what they need. They need stand-up brothers to talk to them real sometimes. I had a young brother. He came from a two-parent household. Parents lost the house. They lived three doors down from me. The mother was a police officer. She passed away from cancer. The father, he was like a journeyman. He did like construction job to job, lost the property. The youngest son, the oldest son was shot playing Russian roulette with a couple of his friends. Shot himself in the head and passed away. The second youngest son was on the back of a three-wheeler, crashing the wall. He's not the same. You have the daughter and you have the youngest son. The youngest son started slinging rock around in the community. I used to talk to him all the time. Like, yo, why are you doing this? You know, this is a dead end road. Look at all the guys that are slinging the older you. The best they've gotten was a ride, and the ride's got taken to you. You've been here. You're 14, 15 years old. He said, I know, Mr. Wilk, but I just got to do what I got to do. So when the father lost the house, you know what he did? He squatted in the house with his boys. He squatted in the house till they couldn't squat anymore. He got locked up. When he came out, I used to talk to him all the time. I never preached to him. Like, yo, man, why don't you think about your future? You could get stacking money, saving money up to do real estate, things like that. I would give him books and things like that. But I was always consistent. And the thing about it is when they see you're consistent, whether you agree with what they're doing or not, when it comes to their senses, they're going to come back and show you some sort of appreciation. He got locked up. I ain't seen him for 5-6 years. Got out. When he saw me in the street, came back and said, man, he hugged me. He said, man, I know that you love me. And I'm not his pops. I just will talk to him just about life.
Okay.
And I didn't sugarcoat anything. And I think what it is, we black men, whether you're coaching or you're doing something, you need to go out and deal with the young men that are in your family. And if you're not the appropriate role model, then you need to find one for your son so they have something to model. You can't tell your children, don't cuss, don't steal, and they see you cussing and stealing all the time. You know what I mean? It's a joke. Can't tell your children, pull up your pants while all the grown men in the family had their pants off their ass. It's a joke. So I think with our children, when I look at it, I think we need to look at it as a case by case situation. But we need to stop being scared of our children. Our young children are our future. That's how I look at them. Whether he's a thug, whether he's a drug dealer, that's still our future. And we we can save one. We got to look at them like that. I don't look at any of these knuckleheads. Anyone that we consider a knucklehead, I don't look at them as throwaway children. Those are our children. Those are ours. That's ours. It's our responsibility. Because you know what? If you don't like what they're doing, you got to remember that you're getting old. You're going to get old one day. And them same ones that you don't like, you have a problem with, they're the same ones that can rob you and cause you havoc. You better get involved.
No, I never said that they were throwaway. I was just stating that.
No, I didn't say that. Oh, okay. That's how I look at it. You got a lot of people in our community because they're doing well. They look at the young people as throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sit down and talk to those young people and find out their environment, what they've been through, the examples that they have, you would have compassion upon them. You will look at the mistakes and the things they're doing. You will look at it differently. You have a different lens because most of the time, grown black men do not talk to the young black brothers. They don't talk to them. They don't engage them about anything with substance. They might preach to them. They don't listen to them. These young people need you to listen to them. What's going on in their life? How they feeling? You need to listen to them. Because no matter what you say, how a young person feel, that's how they feel is real. That's how they feel. And until you're able to deal with that, everything else you're saying, it's just going through one ear after the other until you deal with it. That young brother on the street might just be hungry. He might not be getting three squares. That might be his only problem. He ain't getting three squares. He gonna feel comfortable in his house at night to sleep. We don't know until you sit down and talk to them.
Well, I don't know. I agree with Rob, most of what you say I agree with. I want to go back to the first part of the question, which was why don't the players get it and why don't the players react more involved. One of the things that I get tired of and we need to really look at is, you know, we talk about players and we give them credit for being reactive, but we need to expect more proactivity.
Okay.
So people who can make a difference. And we don't get that. And I think that because there's money and there's drama and there's attention in these reactions, like people will, he got 88 likes or he got 2,000 likes because he posted a picture with a Black Lives Matter. Too late. The kid's already dead. We need to look at the behaviors that have created, you know, these things being the norm in our community, the norm in our culture. The real long-term effects of affirmative action, and I need to fly away from my neighborhood, and I'm guilty. I didn't know that what I know now. If I knew that what I know now, I'd have never moved around the area. I bought a house right down the street from my mom on 61st Street. That's how you save your community, by staying there. We all ran to Willingboro and Williamstown and Upper Dublin and Mount Airy and Chestnut Hill and Sittleminster, anywhere but where we were raised. Meanwhile, if you look down South Philly, the Italian dude came over here as a stonemason in the late 1800s. His son became a member of the trade union, a laborer. He bought a house down the street. His two kids went to Penn State. They all live 2 blocks away. So now you got 4 positive families living in that same span, and they're not having it for that community. We abandon our communities and look at the models we left behind. Look at Lansdowne Avenue. Used to be a thriving business district there because once they killed off the paper food stamps, those businesses are no longer viable. Because now a girl can get on the trolley and go downtown with that little plastic car. So we took the money out of the community too with that, and we contributed by leaving our community behind, so the only economy was that of the government. But if we had sustained, we could have changed that. And now we have an entire generation. And listen, let's not even gloss over this, but I think that's the most important thing. We have to kill rap music in our children's ears. We have to. You cannot have children who grow up in a car seat from 0 to 18 years old and have that message pumped in their ears at high decibels 24 hours a day, every time they're in the car, they're in the house, on the phone, everywhere, and expect them to be positive thinking people. It's just a negative, terrible, horrific, destructive, insidious, poisonous message in our children's ears, and we sit back and dance like it's nothing. You gotta be kidding me. If we eliminate that music and those artists, we'll be 10 steps ahead of the game. But we allow that stuff to proliferate in our community, and not one of them will step up to a microphone and say, by the way, this is supposed to be just entertainment. You're not supposed to imitate these behaviors. It generally will get you locked up or killed, or both.
Wow.
Hey, Phil, let me throw this out at you. This is something that I remember, and I was younger, and I remember like it was yesterday. I remember Craig Hodges used to shoot the three-pointers on the Chicago Bulls. And I remember when he became a Muslim, he was always doing a lot of like turkey giveaways and a lot of different things in the community. And uh-huh. I remember he got cut. And I know that Michael Jordan, they were supposed to be friends, didn't do anything to come into his stead. And I think it was almost like he was blackballed from the league at that point in time. Because he was never able to...
Of course. Because you have to remember, historically, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I know exactly to what you refer. Historically, mm-hmm. the last three spots on NBA rosters have been reserved for veteran white guys. And if you're a black player and you're not a star, and you're not in the first seven or eight of the rotation, you better be important if you're number eight. You're not going to make the team. The spot 9 through 12 on the active NBA roster has always been reserved for older white players or white role players. So once you fall out of that top 7 or 8, it's a little less now because of the salary cap has structured it so you can pay the 10 through 12 guy the same thing no matter who he is. No matter who he is. It used to be that the black players would cost more because they came with more expectation. So if you kept one on your roster, it inflated your salary cap. It inflated your overall team structure and salary. But now the cap is what it is. So a black player could maintain one of those spots. But at that point that you're talking about historically, the last three spots were always saved for white guys. And once you fell out of the top 8 or 9, you had to go.
Oh, the reason why I'm bringing that up, Phil, now, here you had someone that was doing stuff in the community. And my point I'm trying to bring home, and this is just my personal feeling, do you believe that the way the system is set up, that they're going to give extraordinary amount of money to an entertainer or someone that plays sports that's actually going to stick up for their people? Because historically we've seen anyone with a large...
If you're good enough, yeah.
If you're good enough, yeah. Okay.
You could evolve, but you could evolve. Look, LeBron had evolved. He wasn't that person when he began to play. Look where he is now. He wrote a $41 million check for education for the children of Ohio. He's putting his money where his mouth is. He's beginning to evolve and grow up as if he had been to college for 4 years. He has some good people around him. But for the most part, he's going to be an aberration. And you know, there's always the reactive guy. Like today, DeMarcus Cousins said that he was going to pay for some kid's funeral who got shot in the drive-by in Sacramento. That's nice, but how about some season tickets and some education for some of these kids? You only make $20 million a year.
And, you know, that's the thing that kind of really... Phil, listen, you got... I don't know how many NBA players it is. I've never sat and counted. But these men can put together a fund. I'll give an example. Marbury, when he was playing with the Knicks and playing in the NBA, he tried to start his own brand, his sneakers, and it didn't go too well. But I understand from reports that since he's been playing in China, and I think he still is playing, that he's selling a lot of sneakers. His sneakers have really blown up since he went over there. it's easy for these men to put out sneaker brands of their own instead of making Nike all of these billions of dollars. I don't care. Jordan could have put out a pair of Bobos and people would have bought them. I mean, young people would have bought them because he was wearing them. These men could come together and put together a small pool of money themselves, go to target various cities where it's high unemployment, open up one of these abandoned factories that's in inner city neighborhoods, and start cranking out these sneakers. And they would sell.
How about instead of doing that, coming out and doing a press conference and say, you know what, when I was a little kid, I didn't have any Nikes, I didn't have any of that stuff, and I could play. Because if you can play, you can play whatever your mom will buy you. Because they're really just sneakers, and there's really no big difference between pair A and pair B if you're a young kid that play. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set up a fund in perpetuity to fund a scholarship program for like 50 of y'all every year that's educationally dependent versus that pipe dream of playing in the NBA. Think about it. I mean, really think about the whole basketball thing. Think about it. There's 186 Division I basketball teams, right? There's Spain, Croatia, Germany, Japan, Russia, Australia. Everybody's playing basketball now. But you look at the NBA draft, if you're not picked in the first 15, chances are you're getting cut. The fact that we're still feeding our kids these sports dreams is the heart of the problem. It's one of the hearts of the problem. We need to feed our kids educational ambition and nothing else. If you can play basketball, good. They'll find you. You don't have to go play AAU. They'll find you. They found guys in the Republic. They found Serge Ibaka in the Republic of the Congo off of one YouTube video. They'll find you if you can play. Mm-hmm. We're still seeing our kids these AAU dreams and these youth football. The whole way out is the sports. No, it's not. The whole way out is to fund our education system equally, because by definition, public school means that school A should have the same resources as school R and school Z. And it's not that way. I mean, that's been foisted upon us, and we brought into it because we fought to get our kids into these master names and Kappas and Centros and Grove High. And then we got another 29 kids for school for the kids that are left behind. We got to get away from that whole sports comes first thing. That would never survive.
Well, that would take some folks being socially conscious, and that's what we've been talking about. We're going to take a break.
I just have to, you know, you ask my opinion. That's my opinion. I mean, I know. I do working in sports, but my son is at Sojo Prep on a scholarship, and I told him you can't take a sports scholarship. Academic or nothing. You have to play that way, or we're not going to survive.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to let Brother Phil kind of close things out, give any information where people can contact, and give another little plug for the live lecture series that will be debuting November 21st here in Philadelphia with John Carlos. We'll be right back after a brief break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 21- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Exactly what is there in 1 million black folks united in their will and purpose? What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? What's in such a group of 1 million blacks who are unapologetic about their identity? What's in that same group collectively and cooperatively who are willing to sacrifice some of its members' time, talent, and treasures for the uplift of black people in this country? Considering our relative position within the political system, it is rational to believe that 1 million like-minded black voters could effect positive change by leveraging their votes to obtain concessions from candidates prior to and after the election. If you want real change, get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Get involved and get information at info@iamoneofthemillion.com. That's info@iamoneofthemillion.com, or go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. Again, that's www.iamoneofthemillion.com. Get involved with real change.
Time that I thought I couldn't last. time coming, but I know change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our special guest that joined us this evening, broadcast journalist and owner of Mount Airy Media, Brother Phil, Mount Airy Phil Allen. He'll be debuting his live lecture series, Legendary Voices, which will debut in Philadelphia on November the 21st with John Carlos as the showcase of the first lecture series. Brother Phil, give out any information, how the people can reach you, how they can get involved, how they can hear you, how they can be a part of Mount Airy Media. Give it to us all. And again, I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
The best kept secret I heard in a minute. It's next Saturday night, November 21st. The program begins around 6 in the evening at Alma Mater. It's 7165 Germantown Avenue. It's right at the corner of Germantown and Airy. Germantown and Mount Airy. You cannot miss it. Take the 23 trolley or the bus, whatever it is. Comes right through the door. It's not. There's a parking lot across the street. There's a parking lot behind the building. There's no reason. Tickets are $40. And right now, if you go online right now, you can go to my Facebook page. You can go to Eventbrite.com/Legendary Voices. Go to Eventbrite.com/Legendary Voices. And you can get tickets right now. And anyone who gets a ticket right now, it's because they have timestamps on them. They print it out right away. You get a ticket right now, I'll give you two free guests. You can bring anybody you want. I want the place filled, man. We're filming this for TV. I don't want it to be empty. I want it packed. This is, I mean, how many nights do you get to have chance? How many chances do you get to have dinner with a legend, really?
Phil, listen, send that link also to me, and I'll post it on our Time for a Weekly Facebook page.
I will. And if you can't find me on Facebook at Philip Mount Airy's Finest Allen, you can send me an email at MountAiryPhil@yahoo.com. It's easy. Mount Airy Phil, MountAiryPhil@yahoo.com. And I'll shoot you the link with all the tickets you want. I'd love to see my link. Come on now. John Carlos came. If Philly didn't show up, I'd be heartbroken.
Brother Phil, before you leave this evening, Reg is a vegetarian. So what's going to be on the menu?
You know what? The menu is for you. Come on now, it's Mount Airy. You know they got a vegetarian, man. You can surprise them. You can find some meat on there.
You notice who asked that question. I didn't ask it. I know what
you're doing. Come on now. It's Mount Airy. You know that there's a vegetarian. You have to find, you need a microphone, I mean a magnifying glass to find a steak around these parts.
That's what he really would have asked. He tried to put it on me.
No, I won't.
Nah, you'll be fine.
I won't.
He wouldn't know if you have any brontosaurus burgers over there with some barbecue sauce on there.
No, I want some chitlins.
You'll be absolutely fine. And even if you don't, there's a place next door. You can sneak over there and bring something in.
No, we don't.
Hide it in your jacket.
We don't want
to do that. That's too good or something. It's going to be a great night, man. I hope to see everybody there. Dr. John Carlos, an intimate evening. Mr. Legend, right in beautiful downtown Mount Airy. Starts at 6, it'll end around 9 p.m. Don't be late, because we are not waiting. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful evening. And thank you, guys, for allowing me to come right in on your program.
Well, this is only the start of other things, because I want to work with you when you bring the other folks in. And we can do some things, maybe do some giveaways, have the guests, have some of the speakers on.
Which, you know, please, I'm a promoter now. Mount Airy Media is my dream. So I'm looking for all the support I can get, and I appreciate any of it.
Thank you, sir, for being with us. We'll talk soon.